Hello and welcome to the Crisis Point Podcast. I'm Eric Sammons, your host and the editor-in-chief of Crisis Magazine. Before we get started on today's podcast, I just want to remind people to like and subscribe to the channel. We're on a whole bunch of places, YouTube, Odyssey, all the podcast feeds and what have you. So just like and subscribe to other people. But we've grown a lot this year. We're getting near the end of 2021. We've grown a lot this year. We started it up this year and we're doing great in a lot of places. So we really appreciate that. Today, the topic is going to be honestly a bit disturbing. In fact, I didn't think of this till just now. If you're listening to this with young children, you might not want to, now that I think about it, because we're going to be talking about fetal tissue research, and it's a bit troubling, to be honest. In doing research just to interview our guests today, it was disturbing. But we got to talk about it, because this is a definite crisis, a definite issue we're all facing. My guest, though, is Dr. Stacy Trasankos. I was practicing the last name. Thank you. There we go. I was practicing the last name beforehand. She is the Director of Faith and Reason of Bishop Joseph Strickland's St. Philip Institute. She's a doctorate in chemistry, and I imagine she's probably our first doctorate in chemistry we've had on the show, and an MA in dogmatic theology. We have a bunch of those. I'm one of those. We're all MAs in theology at this point. She's the author of Particles of Faith, A Catholic Guide to Navigating Science. Welcome to the program, Stacy.
Hello. Thanks for having me on. I'm a fan of your program and what you're doing with Crisis Magazine, both.
Thank you. Yeah, and you wrote one of our most popular articles of the year for Crisis, related to this issue, more specifically on the vaccines, which we'll get to in a little bit. But we want to talk more generally about fetal tissue research. And I think before we even get started, why don't you give us a definition of what that is and basically how it's being used?
Okay. Thank you for covering this topic. I could talk forever. So I'm so glad to be able to do this. Fetal tissue research is research where they use the bodies of aborted children for medical and scientific research. A lot of us in the pro-life movement think of abortion and everything that I kind of think of it as like two bubbles, everything that leads up to abortion, and we think we're done. But there's a whole industry that has grown up on the other side of abortion. And, you know, supply and demand, it's giving more reasons to do abortion, to use the bodies of these tiny children as honestly gold standard lab rats, because they're better than rats or mice or monkeys. It's a little tiny human body. And there's a lot of research going on using those bodies.
So this is something I think everybody probably who listening to this program knows, of course, of the connection with the COVID vaccines. And it's often said, even in Vatican statements, it says that this happened decades ago, which kind of, I think, gives the impression that this happened decades ago, but doesn't still go on. So is this still going on today? And is it a common occurrence that we're using research using fetal tissue?
Yeah. It's going on more than ever. And that's what was so frustrating to me back when in 2020, November of 2020, about a year ago, when it started coming out that the Pfizer and the Moderna vaccines were in the last of their trials and ready to be used. And they were just tested in fetal cell lines. Don't worry about it. It was a one-time thing. It happened all these decades ago. And I was literally screaming at home. I was like, no, because there is so much research going on in genetics, single cell transcriptomics. I mean, they're doing all kinds of research to understand how a zygote goes to a fully formed human being using the bodies of these children. And there is an industry that's built up and selling these body parts. We've all heard about that. There are all kinds of research projects going on, and Catholics that were upset about using a vaccine that was tested in fetal cell lines, the day is probably already here, if not coming very soon, when any kind of medical advance that we benefit from will be based on research using aborted children.
Wow. So, I mean, so it's that prevalent. I mean, basically it's just, and there is absolutely no regulation on the use of aborted babies.
Well, there's regulation and there's regulation. You know, there's like ethics committees at universities who sit around a table and they say, do we agree it's ethical to do this research? And they say, yes, we do. And so in the scientific papers, it says this research was reviewed by the ethics review board at our institution and found to be ethical. But they're literally, I mean, these are people who are okay with abortion.
Right.
And one thing I think Catholics aren't very good at, I'm a convert, they're not very good at looking at the issue from the other person's side. Okay. Like if the whole world were just Catholics looking out and we could say, oh, we can use these vaccines, we can use these medical benefits, but we don't support abortion. I mean, maybe that doesn't even pass common sense in my mind, but to the people on the outside who are okay with abortion, the minute we say that we're okay benefiting from it, that's all they needed to hear. You never have moral authority anymore after that to tell them not to do this research, because you've already said, by the time the benefit comes from this research, I'm just going to hold my nose and say, I'm against abortion. You shouldn't be doing that, but it's okay if I benefit my health from it. And right, as long as they know that, we can't protest it.
Right, exactly. And we'll get that more in a minute, but what is the difference between, so when we're reading about the COVID vaccines, they're often mentioned how they're developed from, I think it's the HEK 293 line or something like that. And it's like the idea is that it was a baby who was aborted, who, it doesn't matter when it was, but it happened a long time ago. And then they just kept on developing it from that one aborted baby. But so can you explain, first of all, kind of what that means, but then also how has that been different? Because it sounds like that's not what's going on in a lot of other situations. There actually have new aborted babies being used. So that's confusing, to be honest, to me, and I think to a lot of people.
Yeah, the HEK 293 is a very ubiquitous, prevalent cell line because it was successful. Like the researchers didn't know it was going to be successful back in the day. So back in the 70s or 60s, I forget which, but the researchers, Van der Ebb and Graham, were trying to create an immortal cell line. A cell line, you know, the stem cells reproduce very easily. They are capable of multiple reproductions. They haven't differentiated yet into bone or muscle cells. They haven't differentiated. So they're stem cells and they multiply easily. Well, they were able to isolate some from a very young aborted child. And it turned out that those cells would multiply. And so now they've literally been multiplying for decades. And they call them immortal. They're not actually immortal. There is a point at which the cells will stop multiplying. So it's not true that they'll never need another cell line again. There are thousands of fetal cell lines that have been developed. That one happens to be very good. And why do they need it in pharmaceutical research? Because those are human cells and they're all the same. And they're all, so you know what to expect in them. And it's like a consistent medium that you can test different pharmaceuticals in to see what they do to the cells or see if the virus multiplies in the cells or whatever. It's like just having a bunch of consistent cells to test pharmaceuticals in or to grow pharmaceuticals in. And HEK 293 was just very successful. Asking them to not use it now means they lose that consistency. But there are other cell lines that could be used. The researchers just don't want to.
So cell lines that aren't from aborted babies?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, animals,
insects, plants.
Okay. So now the you sent me an article that you wrote before we got on, and it's disturbing, honestly. And you said this is all too common. And there's a connection. So there's a cell. There's aborted babies that are used. I guess there's a connection between. You're going to explain this way better than me, but the high level is that there's a connection between Down syndrome and developing leukemia, and so the possibility of developing drugs that would help combat leukemia. It would make sense if you could do testing on Down syndrome kids, it sounds like, just from a scientific, not ethical standpoint. Yeah. And of course, Down syndrome babies, unborn babies, have a very high rate of abortion. Mothers who conceive kids with Down syndrome, I think the abortion rate's in the 90-something percent or something like that. But why don't you explain how they're using those babies? Like the process from, I guess from the beginning to the end of the woman who gets pregnant, is told that her baby has Down syndrome, to the point where they're being used, and actually to the end point of a mother many years in the future potentially using a drug for her child's leukemia, for example.
Right. Yeah, and thank you for looking at the whole picture here. So here's what happened. Women, and this doesn't just happen in a couple of places in the United States. It happens anywhere there's an abortion clinic close to a hospital or close to a research center. The mother goes in to get an abortion. I've asked Abby Johnson before if this is true, and she said absolutely. One of the things they tell the mothers is good can come from your abortion. If you abort your child, and you give consent, so they do have to get consent from the mother. If you consent to donate the body to science, there are a lot of cures and understanding knowledge that can come from this. So they do use that as a coercion. And the mother signs a form and gives consent for the child to be donated for scientific research. In some places, like the University of Pittsburgh, there's the McGee Women's Hospital, which is right next to the university. They coordinate it. They coordinate that, like if the researchers say, I need a second trimester fetus, and I need brains that are fresh, or I need heart tissue, or I need livers that are fresh, they will coordinate it so that within a very short time after the child has been killed, they are harvesting the organs. And honestly, Eric, there's like a missing explanation in there where a lot of people are saying, do you harvest the organs before the child's even dead? Because that could totally happen. It wouldn't be legal. It wouldn't be even in their minds ethical. But if you're a researcher and you want the best possible tissue for the best possible experiment, fresh tissue is better. So anyway, I have found the paper that was in this article I just wrote for NCBC. They say in the paper that they harvested the organs within an hour after death. So they coordinate it.
I mean, yeah, if it's within an hour, it has to be coordinated.
Yeah.
My goodness.
Yeah, so, they put in an order. And when there are women who have babies in that age to abort, they coordinate their efforts and they get the tissue over. I hate talking about it. Then they go into the lab, and here's where I have been reading scientific papers for years. My husband and I have, and we've been following it. They say in the scientific papers, and I always quote it, and I even teach classes where I show people how to find this stuff. If you look in the methods section of the scientific paper where they describe what they did, scientists have to describe what they did, because if your research is repeatable, you have to give the details. And so they describe everything from, you know, they take the intestines, liver, leg bones, skin of the aborted children, dissected right after death. They preserve them in whatever chemicals overnight, or they freeze them. They mince them with razor blades or put them in a blender because they're trying to get the cells. They put the cells, they fix it into certain solutions if they're trying to get to the genetics. And they just work it up like any other kind of material in the lab. I've read papers, and I'm not talking about a long time ago. I'm talking about in the last year. I've read papers where they say in the material, the methods section, that they put the baby on the table. They put the fetus on the table, and they measure the foot length because that's how they determine the age. You know, they don't know for sure how old the child is before abortion, but once they have the body there, they can measure the crown to rump length, you know, like you do in a sonogram, right, or they can measure the foot length. And they report that because that's how they know the age of the child, and they need to know the age for their research.
What is the typical age of the of these children?
Mostly second trimester.
Okay.
And they say this, I've read this in a scientific paper too, and it's in another one of my NCBC articles. They have a problem in the first trimester abortions because they can't measure the foot length. They can't measure the head to rump length because those are suction abortions.
Right.
So they have to more guess at the age. And they've even said, you know, that's one reason they're trying to grow embryos from in vitro fertilization in the lab, because they can't get at that window of gestation because the child gets torn up by the suction abortion, and they have a hard time isolating tissues. So a lot of the research comes from second trimester abortions.
It sounds like then that the abortion clinics, with this connection with the hospitals, research hospitals, that they're incentivized to do two things. They're incentivized to delay the abortion a little bit, to delay it to the second trimester, and they're incentivized they're obviously incentivized to commit abortions through just getting paid for it, but they're getting paid on the other end as well. They're getting paid, I assume, they're being paid by the research hospital for these babies, because I don't think they just do it out of, you know, altruism. And so they're getting paid on both ends. And it sounds like they're, particularly like in this case with the Down syndrome children, they're incentivized to abort a Down syndrome child, more a second trimester Down syndrome child, more than they would be, for example, a first trimester healthy, you know, without Down syndrome child. And it just, and I just, the idea of second trimester children, that they would, the inhumanity of them performing these, you know, like basically slicing and dicing them, is just unbelievable. My wife had a second trimester miscarriage, and I held the baby. The value of the baby, the dignity of a human baby, is from conception. We all understand that. But it looks, I mean, it's a baby. It looks like a baby. You can't like convince yourself like you could maybe with like a 6 week old, you know, fetus or something, that to act like, okay, this isn't really human. We know it is, but you could maybe tell yourself that. But it 17, 18 weeks, I mean, it's looks just like a tiny little baby is what it looks like. I mean, there's, and so the fact that they would still cut this up and do research on it, just, I mean, how is this any different than, you know, Nazi Germany? I mean, frankly,
I don't know. I mean, I don't know how they do it. I don't know how they do it and are okay with it. I mean, it seems to me like if you were okay with abortion, that would be the moment when you stopped being okay with abortion.
Right.
But they do. How's it different from Nazi Germany? Here's how it's different. Nazi Germany is in the past. It's as if we lived in a culture where it was okay to exterminate Jews, and it was happening every day, and we're just supposed to go on with our lives. And on top of that, you know, insult to injury, they're also promoting medical research using the dead bodies of these exterminated Jews. And on top of that, we're Catholics, we're like, well, it's okay to benefit from this research if there's a grave need and there's remote cooperation and evil, and all the scholars are saying it's okay, you're not culpable if you use the research, you know, if you benefit from the medical research that comes from this practice, you're not culpable, it's not your fault. We don't have any obligation as Catholics to do anything more than make a judicial judgment, for, you know, about whether we're going to use this research or not. And like what, I don't know, I was saying to you before, it's like the scholars are talking that way, but us regular people are like, wait a minute. There's something not right here.
Right. Now, let's then segue into that. Let's talk about Catholic teaching on this. Let's talk about, first of all, just what has the church said on this issue? I know that the first instruction they gave was back in the 1980s, but there's been a number of them since then. Why don't you just give us a review of what the Vatican has, I think mostly through the CDF, is the Congregation of Doctrine of Faith, is how this has come about. What have they said just in general about fetal tissue research?
I'm going to tell you something before I start. In my opinion, you know, I have a master's degree in theology. It's not a PhD. But in my opinion, having looked at this for a long time, there is no clearly developed position from the church on fetal tissue research. And I'll tell you why I'm saying that, because I think that's what we need to get busy doing as common sense Catholics. We need to get busy developing this or helping clarify it. In the first place I always go is the Dignitas Personae, the instruction on respect for human life, the dignity of procreation, from the Congregation of the Doctrine of Faith. And it does deal with the corpses. Okay, so it in section 4 deals with the corpses of human embryos and fetuses, whether they have been deliberately aborted or not, must be respected just as the remains of other human beings. Okay, so there's that. In particular, they can't be subjected to mutilation or to autopsies. Okay, but then right after that, it says if their death has not yet been verified, okay, if we're talking about an aborted child, that they are dead.
Right.
And without consent of the parents or of the mother. So what the church is talking about here is if you have a stillborn child, the parents can donate that child to science. It was a natural death. And just like any other natural death of a child, the parents can consent. But the church isn't clear here about what about a mother who aborted her child? This is just Stacy Trusenko's talking. It would seem that that mother in terminating her child also terminated any right she had to give consent for the child to be used for scientific research.
Right, because you can't really separate her decision to have the child killed with her decision to give it up for some type of scientific research.
That's what I think. And I think what we have here, and again, it's just Stacy Trusenko saying it, I think we have a situation where we have these aborted children, our little bodies that no one has the legitimate right to give consent to be used for research. The only thing we can say as a church is these children need to be buried, at least do something to honor their dignity. They've been murdered. At least let's bury them with respect. And that kind of leaves us in the church is looking at the rest of the world out there and saying, hey guys, it's about human dignity. You know, like that seems such a weak argument today. To us, it's not, but we have a world that already doesn't get human dignity. And we're going to say, oh, you need to take those aborted children and treat them with dignity. Somebody on the other side would say, well, we're using them for medical research.
Right. They say it's for the common good.
The unwanted to cure the wanted. And that's horrible.
Right. And then, I know there's been some people who've tried to argue that some of these have come from miscarried, naturally miscarried babies. But obviously, if there's research where they're talking about them obtaining the baby an hour after, there's no way a woman would naturally miscarry. Somehow the medical facility would have the baby and performing experiments on it within an hour. That's just not possible. My wife has had a number of miscarriages that's not possible.
Yeah. I was, my husband can tell you, he had to peel me off the ceiling of our kitchen when a certain priest came out saying, oh, HEK 293 might have come from a miscarriage. Right. I'm like, are you kidding me? You know, somebody ask the mamas who've had to deal with this, because the heartbreaking part about a miscarriage is it's not like the doctor says, oh, hey, your baby's going to die and you're going to deliver it that same day and you can donate it to science. You don't know when the baby dies. By the time your body passes it, that child has been dead for a long time. That's what's so hard about a miscarriage.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. And so the church is saying essentially because of the fact that the church allows, like, for example, I could note to my family, if I die, my body can be used for science. That's morally permissible for me to do this.
Yes.
And so the church is saying that it is morally permissible for a parent, in theory, to do the same thing with a child who dies. So let's say their five-year-old child dies of some rare disease, and the family could say, yes, you can use the body of this child for research. Mm-hmm. Same with a stillborn child. Obviously, never obligated to do that, but you know, a parent could do that. And so, but what you're saying is the church has not made clear that distinction between an aborted child and a natural, you know, stillborn child or miscarried child or something like that. Correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that certain passage that I was reading, it just skips over this question and it goes right to without the consent of the mother or parents. And then it just says the next thing, furthermore, the moral requirements must be safeguarded that there be no complicity in deliberate abortion and that the risk of scandal be avoided. And it does say after that, all commercial trafficking must be considered illicit. So I think there's enough there to say there is commercial trafficking going on and that is illicit. There's enough there to say that no one can give consent for the child to be used in research. And there's enough there to say that the dignity needs to be honored. And here's the thing. I certainly plan on pushing it next year. It's one of the reasons I cut back my responsibilities at the St. Philip Institute. I'm going to push this. I think we might have Catholics out there, scholars, who are really close to saying that they're okay with fetal tissue research.
Oh, wow.
Because if they're saying about HEK 293 that it happened a long time ago, and it's remote cooperation and evil, and that's okay. The research going on right now with these aborted children, by the time that benefit gets to a family like yours or mine, they'll always be able to say it's just remote cooperation and evil. Right. And so, I mean, remote cooperation and evil was meant to be an exceptional thing in grave need. It was never meant to be a perpetual excuse for accepting the evil. And that, right. that's what we're looking at. And I just want the scholars to say it. Like, if you're not going to fight it, if you're not going to come right out right now and say that HEK 293 is wrong to use it, just as wrong as it is to use an aborted child, and it's wrong to use an aborted child, if they're not going to say all that, then what are they saying?
Right. So we have a clear distinction here between two moral issues, first of all. The first moral issue is, and the church has been pretty clear about this, which is doing this type of research on an aborted baby is immoral. I mean, you know, I think you would say that they should probably be a little better and make it a little more clear. But in general, I don't think you can really read what the church has said about this and say that they're saying it's okay for if I'm a Catholic researcher, I can't use aborted babies for research of any kind. That's just not the way. It's just not possible. So that's the first. That's the beginning. However, we also know that it's happening. Obviously, it's happening a lot. And we're benefiting from it. I think I would be willing to bet you and I both, who both are, not, you're way more knowledgeable than me, but we know about this stuff. We've both probably benefited from this in some way ourselves. You know, like I haven't gotten the COVID vaccines, but it's not just that. And so,
also unvaccinated.
What's that?
Also unvaccinated.
Yeah, exactly. the proud, the unvaccinated. And then though, but that's, you brought up the second moral question, which is mm-hmm. now that it's already been developed. So I'm a Catholic dad. Let's say they from this research they did on the Down syndrome kids, they do find some drug that works wonders for children with leukemia. Let's just say that happens. Mm-hmm. I'm a Catholic dad. My kid has leukemia and the hospital says, hey, we have this drug that's going to make make such a difference in the life of your kid. If I'm a loving father, my first thought isn't, okay, well, how was it developed? My first thought is I want my help my kid out. And so how, this is such a mess. How is this, you know, what is the morality, first of all, of the dad, you know, to find out, but if he does know that it came from this, to use it, because of course we've heard that remote cooperation with evil so much, but it just doesn't seem as clear cut as like, okay, it's okay now because it exists. Because to me, that seems hypocritical for the church to say, you can't do this fetal tissue research. However, you can benefit from it if it's done.
Yeah.
I don't see how that adds up. I mean, I don't know. I don't even know what my question is at this point, but.
But the question is, what do we do? And right. I don't know, Eric, I don't know. My husband and I talk about it all the time. Like, what do we do? Because what you just described, I mean, there is already genetic research that has come on, just specifically, just one example, on leukemia using Down syndrome children, because they're more susceptible to leukemia. So they kind of present, they're like a medical gift to those researchers. They can research it better with all those samples. It's already in a situation. It may not be the drug that you're offered for your sick child. It may just be the knowledge about the genetics to provide treatment. And it's so far removed that unless you kept your nose in the scientific literature every day, you wouldn't even know it. And honestly, right. I think we're already there. I think we at Children of God for Life, my husband and I get a lot of questions about what's in my medicine cabinet. Does this use fetal cell lines? You know, we literally had an email, does my Skittles have fetal cell lines
in them? Oh, wow.
We're like, okay. But yeah. What we're trying to move people past is stop asking about what's in your medicine cabinet right now. We gotta get way back, like you were describing. We gotta get all the way back to where this happens in the first place and do something about it. I don't know what we do. I feel like we conceded ground when the church said we're okay with benefiting from it. I mean, how do we do anything now?
Right, and I think like one of the things that came up with the COVID vaccine debate was, I mean, people looked at what the Vatican had said about this stuff, and they always do say that Catholics should resist this this industry that we should fight against, we should oppose with every means possible. If I remember the language from the 2005 document from the Pontifical Academy for Life, I think it says something like we should oppose in every means, in the media, whatever, this industry and do everything we can. Yet to my knowledge, nobody's opposing it other than groups like yours, you know, like Children of God for Life and some people, individuals like you and like, you know, Crisis, we try to bring it up. But on a church level, like a Vatican level or some type of, I don't see any opposition. Is there opposition I'm not aware of?
No, we have people smiling and posing for the camera as they get the shot. Right. And there isn't any organized, and you know, I'm only saying this because I'm hoping that we do. You know, I don't want to just sit here and criticize what other people are doing because I believe they're people of good faith. I just don't think they're doing a very good job of looking at the issue from the other side.
Right.
I think that our choices right now, even the EPPC said, if we were making choices that led to more abortion in our culture, it would be wrong. And they say we're not, but I think we are.
Right. I mean, I don't see how you could say otherwise, because I know I was reading, I was looking up something, a link for this conversation. And it was like, I saw all these headlines of where like USC Today and stuff, this is from back in December, just saying Vatican says it's okay to get, it's more like to get the vaccines. The church says, the Catholic Church says it's okay. Pope Francis says it's okay to get the vaccines. But not just okay to get vaccines, but it said is morally okay. There's basically the way they said it was, there's nothing wrong with a vaccine that's developed from aborted babies. Because that's what they're hearing.
Yep.
When we make our distinctions of morally permissible, remote cooperation with evil, all that stuff, what they're hearing is there's nothing wrong with an abortion-tainted vaccine.
Yeah.
And so, yeah. So now, I know there's some debate among Catholics, among good, solid pro-life Catholics, that some would say, yes, it is morally permissible to get, like, for example, the COVID vaccines because of all the reasoning, remote cooperation, evil, whatnot. And they're saying we should oppose, we should do stuff, but it is morally permissible. So it's not immoral. It's not a sin to do it. Right. But there are some, and Bishop Athanasius Schneider is one of them, and I think maybe Bishop Strickland, but I'm not 100% sure about him, who are saying, no, it's actually immoral. Like, mm-hmm. Bishop Athanasius Schneider has said, it's immoral to receive it. And his reason, because when I interviewed him for this podcast a few months ago, Bishop Schneider said, it's because of the connection to the fetal industry. Mm-hmm. It's because of the fact that you're basically supporting an industry that is just widespread and doing horrific evil. And so it'd be like supporting the Nazi regime in some way. It's mm-hmm. during the Nazi regime. I mean, mm-hmm. it'd be like that. And I'll put you on the spot. Where would you fall on this spectrum of whether or not I, as a Catholic, is it moral for me? I mean, I'm not receiving, you're not receiving, but in general, would you tell, for example, a Catholic, let's mm-hmm. say a Catholic older person who actually does have danger from COVID, not like a healthy person like that, maybe has some morbidities or whatever, would you tell them that's actually immoral, a sin to get the vaccine because of this connection?
No, and I wouldn't, it depends, okay, and I'll explain that. We get calls like this all the time at Children of God for Life. I mean, Children of God for Life has been on the internet since 2012. This year alone, we got as much traffic on the website as we did all the other years combined.
I believe it.
And we get, because people are asking us the very question you just asked. They're not just asking it. They're in tears. They are shaken up. These are fathers who are going to lose their jobs and won't be able to support their family. These are grandparents who are forbidden to see their grandkids until they get the shot. These are lifelong, you know, career medical professionals who are ready to walk out. And we're doing our best to help them get exemptions, working with them one-on-one. But they ask us, what should I do? And what we tell them and what is on our website, we wrote it out. It's not a sin if you are in a grave situation and you have a grave need and there is no other alternative presented to you, because it's not your fault you're backed into that corner. But whether you take the vaccine or not, okay, so only you, other people, can answer your own question based on your situation. I don't have a grave need. I'm not taking the shot. I live in Texas. Nobody's making me. I had the virus. I'm better. I'm okay. But we tell people, if you decide that your situation is grave enough and you need to get the shot for whatever reason to keep your family safe, it's not a sin. But we can't stop there. So that's what people want to do. They want to make their decision and be done with it. Just like with childhood vaccines, when the children get older, you're like, oh, I'm done with that issue now. We can't be done with the issue. Whether you take the vaccine or not, we all have to get in the game here and put an end to this, because this corner we're backed into right now, that's only the beginning.
Right. And that doesn't even bring up like the fact that, you know, the vaccines are part of a whole program, like we see with the vaccine mandates, where you can't, you know, in the vaccine passports. And so even if you've been vaccinated, you have to oppose those other things. The idea, in fact, I would argue that no matter what, if you there's like a restaurant, for example, that requires vaccination to get in, even if you're vaccinated, just refuse. I mean, you just don't go there because you're supporting something that is, you know, basically implementing something gravely evil. Now, are there any organizations? Okay, so let me take a step back for a second. I was going to ask something else, but let me take a step back. So essentially then, what is, are there any organizations right now that are doing research without fetal tissue in these areas where fetal tissue is being used predominantly? Like, are there any that organizations, I think they're specifically saying, we're not going to use fetal tissue, and are they finding any success in their research?
There are very small ones. You know, I think you've probably heard about the John Paul II Medical Research Foundation with Alan Moy. We're working with them. The problem with, you know, even if they get a whole bunch of funding, they're going to be squashed by big pharma.
Right.
No matter what they do. But there are vaccines that are ethical just for the COVID. There's one down in Mexico. There's, I forget the names of it. My husband knows them, but over in France, that are ethically produced, but they keep getting squashed from getting to the market by Pfizer and bigger pharmaceutical companies. So yes, this research can be done. Yes, the church can support it. But unless that researcher has a path to market, like unless they sell their patent to a big pharma company, and unless all the Catholics make it clear that their bottom line is going to be affected over the ethical issue, they're not really going to be motivated to do it.
Right. And that last part is the if that never is happening.
Yeah.
The Catholics are not. I mean, when we have, you know, a prominent priest, I'll just name him, Father Matthew Schneider, who's going about acting like these vaccines are the greatest things ever, these COVID abortion-tainted ones. And he goes way beyond just saying, oh, it's just morally permissible, to saying we all need to get it. And how on earth, if I'm a non-Catholic, or even if I'm a Catholic who doesn't really think of these things, working at Pfizer, I just hear money, you know, the money thing, cha-ching, 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 because, you know, it sounds like nobody's going to, because the number of people who are not getting the vaccine, I'm actually happy that there's more than I would have thought. I mean, there are a number of us who aren't. It's great. One thing I want to just mention, because you're connected to this too, is the Holy Faith Foundation, which you know, you endorsed and you know, Bishop Schneider inspired, which is helping people who are not getting the vaccine, who are losing their jobs, giving them some financial assistance. We've been going through these to give out the grants, and there's some powerful stories of people who are standing up. I mean, there's a pharmacist, you know, who he basically was told, I won't give all the details because I don't want to, you know, keep him anonymous, but this was a pharmacist who was told he had to get the vaccine in order to continue. And he decided to not get the vaccine, but in doing so, and then the company said, okay, actually you don't have to get it. But because he did all this research, he decided, I can't give this vaccine out. And so he quit his job as a pharmacist because they're like, you have to give this vaccine out, obviously. And he said, no, I'm not going to. And I'm just like, I'm amazed by that faith, because he's a father with kids supporting them. And he's basically, I'm just going out in faith that I'll be, you know, things will work out. But that's an inspiring story. I'm very happy to hear that are people like that doing that. But honestly, it's a small number. It's not enough that Pfizer's noticing it.
No, but you're right. There are a lot of people doing that. I mean, one thing, we have so many stories too. I wanted to write articles for Crisis about the stories we get. I just can't, there's no time.
Yeah.
They're coming in too fast. But one thing my husband, who's a military man, is telling people, don't ever resign over the issue. Right. Make them fire you and make them put it in writing that they're firing you because they're forcing you to violate your conscience. Like right. just make them write it down. And a lot of companies back down as soon as you say that.
Yeah, absolutely. I've been telling people that too. Do not resign over it. Do not resign. Yeah. You know, make them fire you. I actually, one of the people they sent me, I got an email they sent me that the human resources sent to them that where they actually, the person said, you are not being terminated by us. You are terminating your employment by your own decision. I mean, it's this Orwellian language of we're not terminating you, but you can't work here anymore. But that's your decision not to get the vaccine. So you're terminating yourself. And I was just like, because they don't want to say, they're trying to avoid saying we're firing you because of your conscience. They're basically, yeah. But it's like unbelievable the twisting of language they will use. But that person just said, okay, well, I can't do it. So, God bless them. So what can we do practically? Let's kind of wrap it up here by just, I want to just say, we've talked a little bit about this, but if you're just an average Catholic, let's say your job's not in jeopardy. Mm-hmm. We're talking about more than the COVID vaccines here, of course. What can the average Catholic do to try to resist the whole fetal tissue research industry?
Right now, the thing that has to happen is awareness. And, you know, I feel like that's kind of weak, but that's what we're doing at Children of God for Life is just, I'm trying to write about these. We're hiring people to write, to get the story out about all the different research projects that are using these. I want to write a book and get it out there just to raise awareness so people understand how pervasive fetal tissue research is in the medical community. And then what we have to start doing is find some way to protest it. Because if enough of us band together, we can punch them in the face and make them stop right. doing it. You know, we can make there be real consequences. And it is going to take that. But that stand won't happen until we raise enough awareness. And, you know, we are telling people now when they call and ask about a certain pharmaceutical, we're like, look, it's not the product. It's the practice.
Right.
It's not going to be so easy just to clean out your medicine cabinet. You got to get your heart in the game here and stand up for human dignity. It is a human dignity issue.
Right. And I know, like, for example, there's some, I met a student at Franciscan University of Steubenville, and she's working to protest what's going on at the University of Pittsburgh, you know, it's University of Pittsburgh, right? That's doing some horrific stuff.
Yes.
And that's right in their backyard. Steubenville is only about a half hour away from Pittsburgh. And so they're working. And I think that's the type of things we need to support as Catholics are these efforts to really shine a light on specific organizations and medical facilities that are doing this. Cause I think they like to stay quiet. If we just say, okay, all this stuff is bad, that's one thing. But if we say University of Pittsburgh is doing evil stuff and we let University of Pittsburgh donors know this and people in the community know this, hopefully that can shed a little bit of light as well. Okay. So Children of God for Life, that's a great organization. People should find out about that. I'll put a link to it in the show notes, but tell us again, what's the website address for Children of God for Life?
Yeah, it's cogforlife.org.
COG
so
for
life. COG for Children of God, forlife.org.
Right. And also you wrote the article we were talking about for the National Catholic Bioethics Center, and they've been pretty strong on this, right? I mean, they've been doing a good job of kind of holding the line on this. They haven't really... I get a feeling they're not, you know, they're maybe not quite as much as Children of God for Life, but.
Yeah, we've been working with them very closely. I think there are even different opinions within NCBC. Okay. At first, I was disappointed that they didn't take a stronger stand. They were too ready to say Pfizer and Moderna are okay because they were just tested in aborted fetal cell lines.
Right.
But they changed that. We're all learning. We're all trying to figure out things as we go. Yeah. It's happening fast.
This stuff is very confusing. I give a lot of people a pass for, like, you know, you learn over time. Because I thought I had the same vibe for just my following it, is that they start off a little bit weak, but then they've gotten strong, which is good to hear. So, well, good, good. Okay, well, I encourage everybody, I'll put links to all these places in the show notes. I encourage people to find out about that, figure out ways they can resist. And I really appreciate you being on the program today. And I honestly hate talking about this stuff, but you know, I'm sure you do too, but we have to.
I'm glad you did. No, thank you very much for talking about this.
Okay, great. Okay, everybody. Until next time then, God love you.